So this is from Grandpa Jones, who lived in the Ozarks for a little while. It's called I Don't Love Nobody.
Northwest Arkansas has a chance to preview a one-man folk operetta before it goes national. Ain't No More, Death of a Folk Singer is a one-man, one-hour vaudeville cabaret operetta with Willie Carlisle, local folk musician, poet, and Color of Square Dances in collaboration with theater producer and director Joseph Fletcher.
It's a drama that explores the ethics of preservationism, that explores the ethics of sort of revisionism, and that is primarily about a very white, very male folk singer trying to navigate politically and personally the fraught territories of a life in folk song, a lot of which are sexist, a lot of which were racist, a lot of which have these problematic elements, but inside of these problematic elements there's also these sort of little kernels or seeds that can give us ways to make communities, can give us ways to be sustainable, that can give us ways to be self-reliant, that are really valuable and were really valuable in the 60s in the Back to the Land movement and continue to sort of reassert their value in the 21st century.
It's a show, it's about a guy dying and like coming to peace with that. And he's got to reconcile his life and he's got to reconcile what he's done and he's got to reconcile like what he's leaving behind. And he doesn't want to go, and he doesn't know how to do that. And
he definitely doesn't want to go.
And yeah. and he doesn't have enough time to actually really deal with it. So what are you left with at the very, very end? And to find that out, you have to see the play.
The folk operetta's brainchild was Willie Carlisle, who started out with approximately 90 pages of script that he and Fletcher have whittled down into an explosive one-hour show that seemed to be encapsulated by the term operetta.
I wanted to call it an operetta long before I had Googled the word operetta. It is a little. I want to think of it as a little opera, a little piece of melodrama that has some of the fanfare and fancifulness that those sort of things were known for. Also, it has some elements of like cabaret or clowning performances that I'm really interested in vaudeville. I've always been a big admirer of Brecht, etc. I think that I've always just wanted to conceptually link my work to other people who were breaking from the form to do something new with it in the early 20th century.
Operetta is a good way to put it because operetta isn't necessarily through-composed, and this definitely is not a through-composed show, but there is a heightened life to it and very dramatic, melodramatic, I guess you would say, spirit to the action of the play that lends it to be called an operetta.
So much about folk culture is fanciful. The very idea that, you know, a piece of embroidery that somebody did who was not the most skilled embroiderer anywhere, you know, everywhere, can still be a valuable thing or a valuable practice is romantic, especially when we're all, machines are going to be doing all this in 50 years and the sea will be bereft of fish, etc. I kind of wanted to be sure that the play was attached to this, to that, that idea of this high romance and perhaps even exaggeration. Let's take all of the funnest elements of the lives of these of several folk singers that I admire and cram them together in this mishmash, flashback, jump back and forth storytelling, and then throw some puppets and some moving panoramas at it and sort of see what happens.
Tiny pieces of There Ain't No More are directly lifted from the lives of two famous folk musicians. That would be Ramblin' Jack Elliott and Utah Phillips.
Utah Phillips was a good socialist, and there's no sort of way around it. His politics drove everything that he did, and he also was a beautiful songwriter and a great liaison to the craft without doing, I guess, selling out. I'd put it in big quotation marks. Found out about him sort of through the back door of my father's life playing bluegrass music, and always revered him while I was growing up. And I was driving back, or rather on like one of those three-day cross-country Greyhound rides from the Smithsonian Folk Center in D.C. and listening to Utah Phillips on my first-generation what are they called those? They're not iPads, they're iPods. Immediately recognize, like, this is what I need to do. If more people could just know about, like, this method of storytelling and this method of folk singing, then like we would all be closer together.
Well, and I think those two artists, their work and their lives sort of lend themselves to, like, theatrical storytelling.
Yeah.
Like, the pieces themselves that they presented on stage have nothing but stories and songs tied together, or sometimes not tied together. But also, like, their lives are so, like, involved in the politics of the times, and they followed a lot of the things that happened in the show politically and socially that have changed over time. So it allowed us to speak about those things because it fits into the world of these folk singers.
Our Dirty Old Man folk singer goes through some of the same experiences, roughly, that Utah Phillips did. Utah Phillips went to Korea and then had a political upheaval. Our character goes to Vietnam and has a political and social and even sort of...
personal.
Just a personal upheaval. Even though it's based on a few people, it really is... As soon as I became worried about, like, are we lifting too many ideas from this, I looked at how many ideas were in the show, and there's got to be at least 25 people, whose story has found their way into the show. There's one part of the show where he's just giving hillbilly directions, where somebody literally says, like, you're going to turn right at that sugar maple with the drip cans nailed to it, you know, and it's not like any other sugar maple you've ever seen, you're going to know it. Type of thing, you know, where they give you these really convoluted directions to get you somewhere in the forest with no address. And that was stolen from a chair maker who lives out in Stone County. There's bits stolen from this textile artist I knew up in Izzard County. And it sort of covers this broad swath of American folk lore, folk studies that I've been trying to commit myself to in the Ozarks.
Well, there's a part of the show where he goes off to Vietnam and is part of the USO. In this scene, he repeats the same USO act over and over and over again. There's, like, variations on it, but it's like this repetition and, like, sort of this, like, Sisyphus rolling the rock up the hill and taking it down the hill in the middle of a war zone. And he kind of gets disillusioned during this scene, and you see that impact of that. And then he switches from, like, performing in a USO show to talking about the experiences he has around camp. That are disillusioning him at the same time, too. So you see a real progression in the character, that part of the show. But we get to explore clowning. We get to explore political ramifications of the war. We get to explore a couple of different musical styles within it. So it was a really great device to tell a historical story, but tell his personal story tied into each other.
It's like over the course of, and I personally become physically exhausted over the course of the scene, because it's all of these bits that are, in a lot of cases, I took text from actual USO performances where these USO performers are saying really problematic things to try to entertain a bunch of 18-year-old men, you know, who are in Vietnam killing people. Being able to enact that in a way that the character is getting exhausted of it while I'm getting exhausted, and then finally comes to the conclusion that this sort of cultural and economic imperialism has ruined the country, and that the war has ruined the normal ideas of manhood for him. Is really I think it's the single biggest turning point that we have in the show.
Well, it's this progression. So, like, we meet the old man at the start of the show, then we get the idea of, like, him falling in love with his music, falling in love with his traditions, first encountering it, and then he ships off to Vietnam, and all these things that he thought were true and how life was and how he's supposed to live his life just gets washed away, and then he comes back and has to figure out, okay, what now? That's not going to work. And then he embraces the tradition in a different way. And takes that on.
90%, I think, of what we have done in there didn't work. And I think that's why it's turned out well, is because we had sort of interesting bones, like an interesting skeleton of a 90-page script. And then
a lot of failure breeds success.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find that limitations make the best art. If I had infinite money and infinite time, I would never make anything. So, like, knowing that I have 2 months to make the show, I have a budget of X number of dollars, and I have one guy and five instruments, a couple of puppets, and a cranky to, like, direct and put the thing together with, makes me come up with creative solutions that I would never have considered under different circumstances. So in that way, sure, there's limitations, but I think they're an advantage instead of a disadvantage.
Because I provided most of the text, I haven't had the directorial eye that Fletch has had, but frankly, we've been practicing on a 10-foot by 10-foot stage, which is not a tiny stage. Fletch has me jumping up and down, dancing, standing on boxes, rooting around inside of boxes, rolling around on the ground, front of the chair, behind the chair. The chair is the only real piece of furniture on top of the chair. And we also, we indicate several characters just by like moving a hat over my eyes. We have a mask. So the old man goes from, you know, strictly old man in the present to all of these sort of memory functions.
There are two more opportunities to see There Ain't No More Death of a Folk Singer, performed by Willie Carlisle, directed by Joseph Fletcher, before they take this act national to stops including Tampa, Portland, Washington, D.C., Kansas City, Minneapolis, St. Louis, New York City, Philadelphia, and more. Catch There Ain't No More at Black Apple Crossing on Emma Avenue in Springdale. That's April 30th at 8 p.m. And at the Artist Laboratory Theater in South Fayetteville and South College at 8 p.m. May 5th. Tickets are available at GoFundMe.com/AintNoMore. For the KUF Arts Beat, I'm Katie Henriksen. Remember, you can keep up with all things KUF Arts Beat with hashtag KUAF Arts Beat. Nobody loves me.